This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I do have a little bit of work tomorrow to do, so I also, unfortunately, have the ground source guy coming out tomorrow. That's before I knew of the work that I had to do tomorrow. We're launching a big project right now. That is a credential renewing site. And within the next few weeks, there will be literally thousands and tens of thousands of credentials being renewed. There will probably be somewhere in the region of 10,000 renewals that will be going through a front-end submission site, and then will be processed through a back-end processing site that I wrote. So, as you can imagine, things were getting a little exciting. Today they were trying to put together the print for the 35,000 packets that are going out, and discovered there was a field missing on the PDFs we had generated, and nobody saw it in all of the eyes that were looking at it to make sure everything was there. And so we scrambled and got that fixed today and go on. And there was a report that had been discussed last year that would be helpful to have, and between the handoff of projects, that requirement got lost in the shuffle, and we just discovered that requirement, so I'm going to try to get that scrambled together tomorrow to get that fulfilled. I've got the query written for it, so it shouldn't be too bad. A couple hours, should have that knocked out tomorrow. Meanwhile, I had already signed up to have the ground source heating and cooling guy come out to my house tomorrow. So I'm actually going to work from home for a little bit and then remote in, and then maybe, you know, when he gets there, if I still need to get some things done, then I'll just go ahead and head on in. But I think I can get it done from home. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. Anyways, so that goes well. I did get the rest of the stuff finished up for the three books, and have started editing the last book in the Grumpy Old Prophet series, Acting, which is part 5. And that seems to be going well. I haven't had a whole lot of input from my beta readers. I have some. I think I've had 6 or so that have responded. This one is a little quicker than normal in terms of turnaround, and we're getting to that time of year when everybody's really busy. So it's going to be interesting. I, frankly, was getting a little concerned because I wasn't getting, you know, too much stuff, and I thought, oh, well, there I've gone and offended them all. But I had a really nice conversation this week with one of my beta readers who was saying that in the process of reading these books and reading the last one and seeing how the characters reacted in love, some of the characters reacted in love to those who we typically would not react to in love, that provided some tools and perhaps provided some avenues to use for applying against a relationship with an estranged child. And I firmly believe that some of the techniques that I talk about in Acting in that last book really can assist in many areas of human conflict and can put a person who implements them and puts them into practice in a much better position to resolve those conflicts and get the relationship restarted. So I told the beta reader, you know, honestly, if writing these books does nothing else than provide you with some extra tools and potentially help you resolve some conflicts and estrangements with a child, it has all been completely worth it. And I really don't care if some people get offended by the last book. If it helps others to build relationships or to strengthen estranged relationships, then really it's worth everything in writing. Today it is episode 190. I was just thinking 18 more episodes and it will be 3 years. Whew. Well, that's coming up in March, I think. March will be 3 years. Third week of March, I think it is. Not sure what I'm going to do for the... Four years! Four years! 4 times 52. 208 episodes would be 4 years, and this is episode 190. So, need to figure out what I'm going to do for the four-year episode. Aside from that, all is well. I did come across a topic this week that I thought, oh, that's very interesting. I should talk about that, except I didn't readily know what I was going to talk about. Because it's a very prickly thing. Made even more so by a text message that I had gotten from a friend who had said, have you talked to so-and-so recently? Another one of my friends. And I said, no, what's going on? And this friend said, do you have a minute to talk? And I said, well, I will here in a second. I'm in a meeting, but I'll call you right after that. Turns out when I called that this friend wanted me to know that our mutual friend, our mutual friend's father had committed suicide. And for those of you who listen to this podcast on a regular basis, which is very few, you'll know that I did a podcast on the suicide of one of my friends just a few weeks ago. And I said, you know, a lot of what I wanted to say about suicide then, with the summation being that I do not believe that just because a person commits suicide, that that becomes some sort of unpardonable sin, which then condemns them to hell. I think God's grace is wide, and He understands our frame. And even if we have never called His name, I think that He speaks to us in those final moments of life and helps us to understand the choices that are really before us. So I had already spoken about that, but what's triggered this new interest in the subject of suicide was a frontline program that I saw called the Suicide Plan. This was very interesting. And I'm under a little bit of a challenge today because I got away from work a little late. And these days, if you get away from work a little late, it's already dark. So I have all these notes that are sitting beside me, but I pretty much cannot read them. So we're just going to muddle our way through this. And at the very worst, if it gets to be too dark and I run out of things to talk about, I'll just ramble till I get home. The idea of the suicide plan was an examination of certain entities in our country who are tired of waiting. for society to stipulate the do's and don'ts of assisting someone in their wish to commit suicide. If I recall from the program, there are only really two states, Oregon and Arizona, I think, that allow any kind of assistance to be given. And, you know, that's somewhat limited. And other states, you're pretty much in trouble. They gave an example at the beginning of a man who had a friend or brother or father or something who just, he didn't want to live in his physical condition any longer. And so he had decided that was going to be it. And so he had a gun and he was going to kill himself. And his friend was talking to him about it. And they had determined for some reason, because of the shape of the gun, that if he tried to, maybe it was a short barrel or something, if he tried to use the gun right side up, that the base of it was going to be, the trigger guard was going to be bumping into his chin. And so his friend, I think, suggested, well, maybe you could turn the gun upside down. And in fact, that seemed like that was going to be a much better way to go about it. And then his friend began walking down the trail that led away from the house and subsequently heard the shot. And then contacted the police and felt like it was, you know, best that everybody understand, you know, why this man committed suicide and what the process was. And this guy was promptly arrested because he was brought up on manslaughter charges, I think, because he had aided and abetted. And then they talked about it, and they talked about multiple cases, but they got to it pretty quickly. And this is where it kind of started getting interesting. They talked about one case of another woman who had had a husband who had had a long, or no, whose husband's first wife had had a long lingering sickness, and she didn't want to put her, the same man, through that again. And she had cancer and she was a smoker and she just didn't want to do that. And so she had gotten in contact with an organization. And I can't see the name of the organization. It was like Compassion and something. And they provide information and were able to provide her the information as to what drugs would be useful in this and the quantities required. They refuse to order any drugs for you or anything like that. They just have information on their site. And as to whether or not this is assisting suicide, this is this murky legal area. And so they were talking about that and how that this woman had been able to order some of these drugs, and she had to have like one drug to sort of sedate her a little bit and calm her down, and then another drug for anti-nausea, because some of the things that she was taking that were going to kill her could upset her stomach. And, you know, there was this whole ritual and lots of pills. It was like 60 pills she was going to take in 15 minutes. Quite an elaborate ritual she was going to have to go through. As an aside, all of the people who are discussing killing themselves in this context are very open about it. and typically plan. They get all their affairs in order. They talk to all the people that they want to talk to. And then they say, okay, it's time. And then they go do it, which to me seems a much kinder, gentler way to go about it than the way my friend several weeks ago, or the way my friend's father just last Monday, go about it, where they don't talk about it at all and then just suddenly commit suicide. Because that's so jarring to the family. And it's so disruptive. But in those discussions and in those talks, apparently if family members assist in any
measurable way,
in any measurable way, then after they're gone, you know, they can be brought up on charges. So it's a bit of a conundrum. They did then start telling a fairly fascinating story about an organization where it does start to get somewhat convoluted. Because you have one organization out there that is simply saying, okay, here's the information, here's what you need to know, and just allowing people to order the stuff themselves and get it offline. There is another organization called Final Exit Something. And they have actually developed a procedure. There was a book called Final Exit that I believe was written by a medical doctor who subsequently made into a DVD. But they were saying that in order to get enough barbiturates to kill you in some sort of a somewhat pleasant way without having all this anti-nausea medication and sedating yourself and all that kind of stuff, that the only way you can get enough barbiturates to kill you is if you get a prescription from a doctor. And of course, if the doctor knows that you're going to use it for suicide, then the doctor can be brought up on charges. And so in their quest to find some mechanism that was readily available, that was non-violent, that could be used outside of a panicked setting, my friend who committed suicide several weeks back closed himself up in a garage and then just turned on his car. The difficulty with that is that the body reacts to carbon monoxide poisoning. I don't want to get too graphic, but the body realizes it's starved for oxygen when it comes to carbon monoxide poisoning. And so you begin gasping, you begin, you know, having that panic of not getting oxygen. It recognizes there's a problem. Apparently, the body does not have that same reaction to helium. I don't know who figured this out, but this final exit, their plan is to, you go down to Party City and buy two of those little helium tanks to blow up balloons, you know, like the size of the little propane tanks. You buy two of those, and then you buy yourself some plastic tubing, and they basically show you how to rig this thing up and just get a plastic bag and put the tubing in the bag. And there's even places now that sell these suicide hoods. And you turn on the helium and let it fill up the bag, and then you pull the bag over your head. Take three or four really good deep breaths, and you are out. You black out, and within just a few minutes, you're gone. All these materials are readily available. And this is the process that Final Exit suggests. in addition to that final exit, is willing to send counselors to you to assist you in this. They won't buy the supplies for you, but they will sit with you while you do this. In addition to that, just saw a deer on the road. In addition to that, afterwards, they take the plastic bag and the helium tanks and leave the house and then dispose of them. Okay, now this is getting just a little bit, you know, this is where it really starts getting murky from a legal standpoint. Theoretically, Final Exit has a medical team that the person who wants to commit suicide has to submit all their medical records to so that the medical team can determine that, in fact, they are suffering. Where it really starts getting gnarly, well, what happened then, I guess in Arizona, a woman died, looked like natural causes, then her sister and brother-in-law started looking around, started saying, you know, there's something wrong here. Began to go through her stuff, started discovering correspondence with this Final Exit organization, tracked down somebody, and the guy admitted, yeah, I was there, and this is what we did. Well, they took it to the police immediately. The police started investigating for, you know, manslaughter, and go and talk to this person, and he says, well, who you really need to talk to is this senior counselor, because she's been to 18 or 19 of these things, and the police are going, whoa, wait a minute. And so then they start going after Final Exit as an organization across the United States. Even worse, they expose a case where there's a woman that comes to Final Exit and she tells them all about her medical history. I'm getting my mail. Tells them all about her medical history and how much suffering she's enduring and how she wants to end her life and how, you know, this, that, and the other, and yada, yada, yada. And so they go ahead and assist her. She does end her life. One moment. She does end her life, and then it comes out later that, in fact, she did not have all those diseases. She was, in fact, mentally ill. She only thought she had all those diseases. If that's not gnarly enough, the FBI or somebody then sets up a sting pretending to be someone who wants to end their lives, and they have this counselor on tape, and the guy's talking about, okay, so I put the hood over my head, and then what happens, you know, what if I, like, get scared, and what if I don't want to go on with it? And the guy says, well, a lot of people, their arms sort of twitch involuntarily after they've pulled the hood down. And we tell them, I'm backing into my garage. We tell them that your signal of pulling the hood down means that you have made the decision that you really do want to do this. But there is a lag time of, you know, 15, maybe 30 seconds of pulling the hood down to when you black out. And in that time, the guy's saying, you know, you may have an involuntary twitch where your arms might just twitch, and that's just natural. But I'll be there, and if you want to, I'll hold your hands down so that you don't reach up and tear the hood. Whoa! When I read this, I was like, whoa, time out. Now you've got a problem. And, of course, the FBI, when they got that on tape, well, when they had this guy saying, well, could you show me how you do that? And as soon as the guy came up and put his hands on the other guy's arms, they just immediately arrested him. Because now, you know, it's really kind of more than assistance. Now it's gone to, we don't care if you're having second thoughts. we're going to go ahead and make sure that you don't botch your own suicide, which is like, oh, man. Now, interestingly enough, after bringing these cases to trial, there some people pled out. Other people, they couldn't convict them because of a hung jury. I mean, this is a huge discussion in our country about how much we should allow people. And, you know, in thinking about all that, I certainly believe that people deserve a right to make their own decisions, not only in whether they not commit suicide, but whether or not you assist someone in committing suicide. I mean, I believe in free will. I'm a heavy, heavy believer in free will. I guess the sad point for me is, and well, before I say that, I should qualify this. I live in my opinion, a spectacularly wonderful life. I'm fairly free of pain. You know, I earn sufficient money to be comfortable. I don't have gnawing needs every day. I have things that I engage in, creative things that I love. I have a wonderful wife, great family. I mean, I have a good life. It'd be very easy for me just to sit and say, well, I don't understand why anyone would want to commit suicide. You know, but the fact of the matter is I realize that there are people who are in much more dire circumstances than I am. So I can understand. I can understand if someone just, you know, gets to a place where they don't feel like they've got any other option. But at the same point, I recognize that this is destruction. When a person takes their own life, that's destruction. And I think the really sad thing about this is not only the destruction that you leave behind among all the people who knew you and loved you, but the destruction of the potential of what you could have contributed to the world. Because I think one of the great opportunities and one of the great challenges of this life is that each of us has an epic and a quest and an adventure. Each of us has, and by that I mean it's something that only you can do, something that will not be done, that no one can stop you from doing, and something that if you don't do it, there will be a gap in the world. And I guess my sorrow for people who commit suicide is the misunderstanding of how amazing and precious their lives are, and the misunderstanding that they have something that they can contribute that will leave a legacy before they die. And so, you know, if I'd say anything about people who commit suicide, it would be, it's just sad that there's no one around them who could find a way to express to them that there is something in their lives that is worth doing, that there is something in their lives that is worth contributing to, and that if they'll make that contribution of their time and their creativity, that they will leave a legacy behind that will not be left by anyone else if they don't do it. that instead of a gap being left behind because they commit suicide, there will be something wonderful left behind, even if it's only for one person. Like for me, obviously, it's writing. And even if these four books of Grumpy Old Prophets, if the only thing they accomplish is helping one of my beta readers mend an estranged relationship because I've given that person new tools, mend an estranged relationship with a child, if that's all this series accomplishes, it's worth doing. It's worth the 3 years that I've spent working on this. So the sadness for me here when a person commits suicide is that that thing, that epic quest and adventure that they had to do, that was before them, that was their opportunity to do, by not doing it, they left a gap in the world. And so I think from that perspective, while the people who are assisting others in committing suicide are well-intentioned and people of good conscience, unless a person is in a coma and there's not really chance of any responsiveness, or unless a person has made a decision, as I have, that I don't want extraordinary care sustaining my life because I'm ready to go, it's a little sad to me to see that someone would walk away from the opportunity of leaving something that has the potential to help another in their journey on life. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.